Today is Wednesday, May the 7th, Yom HaZikaron, second day of the month of Iyar. This is the women's Chumashir. We're in the middle of Parshat Ki Tavo, Dvarim Perek Chav Zayin.
Hey, Rabotai. Rabotai. We begin today Perek Chav Zayin. And we will read the first 8 psukim just to try to see the unit from beginning to end, and then I try to identify what's happening here. Seems to be some confusion. It's about something about lots of stones. What has to be written on the stones? What's the purpose of this whole thing? But let's just read the text itself. Sometimes the text tells us something, and sometimes the text tells us to ask questions. What's going on here? Vayitzav Moshe v'ziknei Yisrael et ha'am lemor, shamor et kol ha'mitzvah shel Elohim mitzavechem hayom. Please observe the commandment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will instruct you today. V'hayam, bayom asher ta'avru et ha'yardein, the day you crossed the Jordan River, El Haaretz, Asher Hashem Elokecha Noten Lach, V'hakemotan Lecha Avonim Gidolot. You are to erect big stones, V'sadata Osam Basid, and you are to put plaster on top of those stones. V'chatavta Alehen Et Kol Divrei HaTorah Hazot, Be'avrecha. And you are to write all of the words of the Torah when you cross. L'ma'an asher tavo el ha'aretz, so that when you come to the land, so that you will come to the land, asher Hashem elokecha noten lecha, eretz zavat chalav u'dvash, ka'asher diber Hashem elokei avotecha lach, just as God had promised you. V'haya be'avrachem et ha'yardein, after you cross the Jordan, Takimu et ha'avanim ha'ele, asher anochi mitzavei etchem hayom, you are to take these stones, which I have commanded to you just now, and where should you place them? The Har Eval. Place them on Har Eval. V'sadata osam basid, and put plaster on them. Uvanita sham mizbeach, l'ashem elokecha, and you will build a mizbeach there. Mizbach avanim, a mizbeach out of stone. Lo tanif alehem barzel. Metal shall not be used to fashion or trim these stones. Avanim shleimot tivneh. You shall only use whole stones. Et mizbach Hashem elokecha. V'ha'alita alav olot. And on this mizbeach you will bring olot. L'Hashem elokecha. V'zavachta shlamim v'achalta shah. And you will slaughter korban shlamim there, and you will eat it there. V'samachta lefnei Hashem elokecha. And you will rejoice in the presence of your God. V'chatavta al ha'avanim. And you will write on the stones. Et kol ha'divrei ha'torah hazot ba'er heitei. All of the words of the Torah explained well. Anybody know what's going on here? It is somewhat difficult to understand what exactly is happening, how many sets of stones, when are they going to be written, who's going to do the writing, because after they cross the Yarden, Moshe is no longer in the picture. It is Yehoshua. So is this being commanded to Yehoshua? Is it being commanded to Moshe? How many stones? What's the purpose of writing on these stones? What are you writing on these stones? So obviously there are a lot of things that have to be filled in. So let's take a look at Rashi, and then I will distribute a Gemara, which Rashi has lifted his remarks from, and you will see why Rashi is attacked by everybody who comments on the Gemara, because Rashi is not quoting the Gemara accurately. Rashi has something else that is not included in the Gemara. And it troubles all of the commentaries. But let's take a look at, see Rashi's opening remark in Pasuk Bet. What? Correct. That's what it sounds like. Correct? Another covenant, another brit. We shall see. But that's basically going to take place on Har Grizim and Har Eival, which is another unit to follow right after this. This is separate and independent of the assemblage of all of Am Yisrael on Har Grizim and Har Eival. We'll learn about that in the coming weeks. Six tribes on one, six tribes on the other, and so on and so forth. We'll see what's happening. Take a look at Rashi, Pasuk Bet. V'hakemotalach. And you shall erect for yourself. This is the first time that the pasuk appears. Bayardein. You shall erect them in or near the Jordan River. V'achakach totzi misham acherot. Then you will take from the Jordan River, you will collect other stones. V'tivne mehen mizbeach b'harevam. And from the stones that you gather in the Yarden River, you will now transport those to Har Eval, and there you will build the Mizbeach that is documented in Pasuk Hei. It says, Ubanita Sham Mizbeach. And it says at the end of Dalet that it's Sham is Har Eval. So you are to go to, at least what Rashi says thus far, you go to the Yarden, you erect stones, then you take from the Yarden additional stones, bring them to Har Eival, okay? Nimtzeit, the net result is, ata omer shlosha minei avanim hei. Are you? There were three sets of stones. One, shtei mesrei by Yarden, 12 at the Jordan River, ukinegdan ba Gilgal, and so too in the city of Gilgal, ukinegdan ba Har Eival. And similarly, another 12 at Har Eival. Okay? This is what Rashi says. So now, what are you, Rashi sitting right here, what are you going to ask Rashi?
Where is the third?
Where is there a reference in this unit to three sets of stones? The word Gilgal doesn't appear in this text. Har Eival does. And where does it ever say that there is a third set of stones at all? Correct. But I'm just looking at the text itself. So Rashi acknowledges that he doesn't give us the full picture, and he writes at the end, where did I get all this information that there are three sets? Kidi'ita Masechet Sota. As it is recorded in Masechet Sota. So we are going to see what the Gemara says in Masechet Sota, and then you will ask Rashi how he understood this Gemara in Masechet Sota, because it doesn't seem to be what the Gemara is saying.
Pass it around, please.
Okay. Does everybody have it? Okay. This is Sote Daf Lamed Hey Omud Bet, which Rashi is quoting supposedly verbatim. Nimtzeit Ata Omer. The Gemara now comes to a conclusion because what happened was there was a discussion two blot earlier about this. Then, as the Gemara often does, it goes off on a tangent. So now the Gemara comes back to what we were talking about. Nimtzeit Ata Omer. Shlosha Minei Avanim Hayu. There were three sets of stones. Echad. Shehekim Moshe Be'eretz Moav. The first set of stones are the stones that Moshe erected in Eretz Moab. Any indication that in the text?
No.
None whatsoever. The Gemara is aware of the fact that there is no reference to this in a text. So what the Gemara is going to do is try to create what is called a Gzeira Shava, find a phrase that appears in this text, find another phrase that appears somewhere else where the phrase Ba'er Hetev appears, and the Eretz Moab is going to be mentioned there, so now we will make this the assumption that the same thing is taking place. So here the Gemara is going to explain. Shine'emar, I will prove it to you. Please open up to Sefer Dvarim, Perek Aleph. Perek Aleph. Pasuk. Hey. Perek Aleph, Pasuk Hey. The Eiver Hayardain, the Eretz Moav, Ho'il Moshe, Be'er et HaTorah Hazot Lemor. This is in the introduction to Sefer Dvarim. Where and what purpose is Sefer Dvarim? It's Be'er HaYardain. This is on the other side of the Jordan. This is before we cross the Jordan River. Where? In the land occupied by the country, by the nation called Moab. Ho'il Moshe. Moshe began. Be'er et HaTorah Hazot. He started to explain this phrase, this, the Torah, whatever the Torah is. What? That's correct. Next, at the end of our unit, in Pasuk Chet of our unit, it says, V'chatafta al havanim et kol divrei ha-Torah hazot ba'er heite, ba'er. So there is a phrase, ba'er, and there is a phrase, ba'er, which both mean to explain.
One is past and one is command. One he did it, and the second one, you shall.
No. Ba'er does not mean past, and be'er doesn't mean past. It means to explain, both of them. I'm not exactly sure of the grammatical use, but they both mean,
right.
Will begin to explain. So now let's look at the sources that it quotes. So now back in the Gemara. Shine'emar. Be'er ha-yardein be'eretz Moab, ho'il Moshe be'er, etc., etc., etc. Ula halan ha'omer, later on in the Torah, this is our parsha, the Torah writes, v'chatavta alehen et kol divrei ha-torah hazot, Be'er heitei. The Gemara doesn't even put it in the word. It says zegimelah, zegomer. That means etc. Look it up yourself. Don't be so lazy. But a printer did that. Ve'atya be'er be'er. Ve'atya, and you learn out a comparison from be'er to ba'er. What comparison do you learn? To fill in information. In that pasuk in Peret Aleph of Sefer Dvarim, the Ba'er or Be'er is this tells if the pasuk tells us where it's taking place. Where is it taking place? Eretz Moab says the Eiver Hayadin the Eretz Moab. Here it just says the Chatavta Alehen et you should write on these stones. And tell the Ba'er Etev doesn't say where. So the Gemara now assumes that the one set of stones is to be used by Moshe in Eretz Moab before they get to Jordan River. And Moshe writes, whatever they're supposed to be writing, Moshe writes them in Eretz Moab. That's, just give me one second. That's one set of stones. Two, the Echad Shehetim Yehoshua B'toch HaYarden. And a second set of stones that Yehoshua erected at the Jordan River. Shine Emar, because there is a pasuk in Sefer Yehoshua, which writes, Ushteim Esrei Avanim Heitim Yehoshua B'toch HaYarden. Can't get any clearer than that. 12 stones which Yehoshua erected in the Jordan River. 3, Ve'echad Shehekim Ba'Gilgal. And a third set that were erected in Gilgal. Shine'emar, ve'et shteim esrei ha'avanim ha'ele, asher lakhu, etc., etc., etc. What's going to happen there is, the three is, the Gilgal is what? Right, gives you the whole thing. Heikim Yehoshua Bavuzon. Asher lakhu bin ha'yardein, heikim Yehoshua Bavuzon. The 12 which Yehoshua placed in the Yardein, he then picked them up and transported them where? To Gilgal. Okay? That's what the Gemara says are three. One, Moshe. Two, Yehoshua at the Yardein. Three, those very same stones, Yehoshua transports them to Gilgal. That's what the Gemara happens to say. What does the Gemara seem to totally eliminate? What does the Gemara... The Gemara makes no reference to Har Eival. And the text itself does tell us, our text tells us something about Har Eival. Our Chumash tells us something about Har Eival. So, it could very well be that the Har Eival one, we now have four sightings of stones. There are really four sightings. There's Moshe, there's Yardein, there's Har Eival, and Gilgal. Now, three of them are what the Gemara says, Nimtzeit Ata Omer. Three of them, the Gemara just like ignores completely Har Eival. Ignores it. Rashi, when he quotes three, which three does Rashi quote? Yardein, Gilgal, and Har Eival. So which one does Rashi omit? The one from Moshe. Rashi doesn't quote that at all. And therefore, if Rashi is introducing to us that there are indeed three sets of stones, which is not evident from the text itself, everybody is so much troubled with Rashi that if your source happens to be this Gemara, which we just looked at, you are not identifying the three properly. Because the three, according to the Gemara, are Moshe, Yardein, and Gilgal. In effect, only two writings. Moshe writes in Eretz Moab. Yehoshua writes in Gilgal, then transports those very same stones to where? To Gilgal. Excuse me, in Yardein, which he writes in Yardein, and then he transports to Gilgal. That's correct. So it's somewhat difficult. Why does Rashi totally abandon the writing of Moshe and come up with Har Eival? Now, I know why he comes up with Har Eival. Why does he come up with Har Eival? Because it says it in the text. It says it right here in the text.
Why does the Gemara ignore it except it says it in the text?
Correct. That's correct. Why did the Gemara? That's correct. So, that's one thing we're going to have to work on. How to jive four into three. Yes?
When it says Moab, is that the Bailiff of which became the Nakhla of Reuben, Shimon,
Pasuk, Shem,
Manasseh? In other words,
is it
directly on the other side of the
Yarden? No. Eretz Moab, as well as Ammon and Edom, were parts of the land that we were supposed to get, but did not. The initial promise by God to Abraham was to 10 nations. We only were awarded 7, according to the Ramban. That was one of the consequences of the Chet HaMeraglim. And that later on, L'Yemot HaMashiach, we will take over Eretz Ammon, Eretz Moab, and Eretz Edom. Eber HaYarden is none of those. Is not Moab. That's correct. Moab is much more to the... This is the north of Israel. North of... It's where Syria is, basically. Lebanon and Syria. That's where Ammon and Moab is. Maybe next time I'll bring in a map. I'll show.
So this would have happened considerably earlier.
That's correct.
The relationship between Gilgal and Har Eival. Are they not the same thing, for sure?
It doesn't seem to be exactly the same because we don't identify Har Eival and Gilgal. We identify Har Eival and Har Eival. Unless that's the reference which Rashi is referring to. Unless the Gemara is referring to that. Unless the Gemara simply means that the Gilgal is the Har Eival one. That's possible. We will see. I know, but we know that Har Eival is not the Yarden. We know that. So that's one issue that we have to try to understand, to reconcile. That's number one. Second issue, what is being written on these stones? What's being written on these stones? The Torah is rather vague as to what might be written on these particular stones. So let's take a look at Rashi doesn't say anything as to what's written on the stones. Doesn't tell us. The Torah just writes a rather broad statement, which says, "Et kol divrei haTorah hazot." That phrase is repeated in Pasuk Gimel, "Et kol divrei haTorah hazot be'avrecha," and in Pasuk Chet, "V'chatavta al avanim et kol divrei haTorah hazot be'er heitayim." So there are two possible explanations to what it means. One is to take the word literally. Et kol divrei haTorah hazot, from Bereshit until La'inei kol Yisrael. To write the entire Torah on 12 stones. According to the way most explain it, the 12 stones, obviously symbolic of 12 Shvatim, it's not that you divide the Torah into 12 parts, and you say this one is to this, you write the Torah 12 different times, in its entirety, on a stone. Something which naturally is impossible, unless you're that guy from Woodburn, who, micrography. I have all of Sefer Dvarim on one little picture, all of Sefer Dvarim, and I'm sure people have other things on one little picture. Unless you're him, you can't do such a thing. And on stone, it's a little more difficult to do that than on a canvas or something like that, or a piece of paper. So that's one suggestion. A second suggestion, favored by Sadia, cited by Ibn Ezra, is that it was only the list of commandments, not the narrative in Torah text, just a list of the commandments. 613 azarot. Do this, don't do this. It's still a lot. 613 commandments on one stone. So that's a second thing. Okay? Now, what does Be'er Heitev mean? What does Be'er Heitev? Says Rashi. Take a look in Pasuk Chet, Rashi, B'Shivim Lashon. It has to be written in 70 different languages. Whatever was written on the stone had to be written in 70 languages. Because typically, Chazal operate with the notion that at that time there were 70 nations. 70 nations speaking 70 different languages. And that was the impression that Chazal always operated. There are Shivim Lashonot. So, okay, very nice. Shivim Lashon. A second possible interpretation is that writing the text itself of a mitzvah still doesn't give you a clue as to what the mitzvah means. Right? So what would you have to do in order to have it heitev? Torah Sheba Al Peh. You now have to write down that which Torah Sheba Al Peh says explains this mitzvah. The Torah tells you to eat matzah on Pesach. How do I know what a piece of matzah is? We don't know what a piece of matzah is. You know, we don't know what maror, what does maror mean? How are you supposed to know? We don't know what a sukkah looks like by reading in the Torah about Sukkot Teshuvu. We don't know what tefillin are by writing ukshartam leotayadeha. So even further adding to the perplexity situation, you have not only Torah Shabbat, you have half the Torah Shabbat, or good part of Torah Shabbat explaining what's going on, or 70 languages, which is an enormous amount. So now, whatever it is, let's present what the thrust of these writings are, and then perhaps we can understand what the symbolism behind all of this is. So the Ramban suggests, commenting on Pasuk Gimel, V'chatavta aleihen et kol divrei ha-Torah zot be'avrecha, as you were about to cross the Yarden, lema'an asher tavo la'aretz, so that you will now come into the land. So what's happening here is, this will work very well, assuming that Moshe writes the first set of stones. Moshe knows very well that he is not going to accompany them into Eretz Yisrael. He knows very well. And therefore, as he is about to hand off his charge to Yehoshua and the Zekenim, he wants to give them one last reminder that entry into Israel is predicated upon one thing, a commitment to observe mitzvot. That's why God is taking you into Israel, to enable you to have the opportunity to observe Taryag mitzvot, of which about 270 of them are somehow related to Eretz Yisrael. 270 of the 613 mitzvot are related to Eretz Yisrael. And the only way to fulfill this is so it's, on a simple level, it's a reminder that entry into Eretz Yisrael will hinge upon a commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm not going to be here any longer to bail you out. And he will say that explicitly in next parasha, in the Tzavim and Vayelech, more than once. I'm not going to be here to bail you out should you mess up as you have messed up in the past. So please take my message seriously. Even more so, I would take it one step further. And I will draw you an analogy, something that drives Gabaim crazy. Crazy. Guy comes to the Gabbai and says, I must have an aliyah today. Why must you have an aliyah? Have a yard sale. Okay? The halacha is that a chatan, the Shabbat after he gets married, is obligated to have an aliyah. If we were to call women to the Torah, it would be, a kala would be obligated as well. It's the same with that. Chas is supposed to represent the kala. But the Shabbat after he gets married, Chatan is obligated to us, not the Shabbos before. No such thing as the Shabbos Oifruf. That's made up by people. The Shabbat Chatan is what is the way Sephardim observe it. The Shabbat after the wedding, you make a big celebration, you call the Chatan. That's what it should be. That's the way it is. That's the, in fact, it's the number one Chiyuv. When you have conflicting Chiyuvim, there's a hierarchy. Chatan is the number one thing. A child reaches the age of mitzvot. What do? We give him an aliyah. And somebody, Rahman al-Aslan, gets up from Shiva. The first opportunity when he comes to shul after he gets up from Shiva, he gets an aliyah. Also chiyuv. Get an aliyah. A couple has a baby, we give the father an aliyah. The Shabbat before the bris, to name the girl, everything we give an aliyah. What's the purpose of this chiyuv? Well, why do we call such a thing a chiyuv? And the answer is very simple. Whenever one engages in a new stage in one's life, the message that is supposed to be transmitted is that this new stage in one's life has to be guided al pi derech haTorah. That's the simple message that we want to communicate. Somebody had a baby, right? So we want to let father and mother know that they have a dual responsibility. Not only to change the baby's diapers at 2:30 in the morning, but to begin the challenge, which is far more difficult, of transmitting the whole heritage of Am Yisrael to your child. That's a far greater challenge. So we symbolically remind the parents by calling them to the Torah as soon as they have a boy or a girl. Child reaches the age of mitzvot. What do we want to remind the boy when he has reached the age of mitzvot? That now you have to take that which is written here seriously. This is what it means in our tradition to become an adult. Somebody goes through a transition and gets married. So he's starting a new household, a new life. We want you to focus on the direction in which you should build your house. Symbolically, we call to the Torah that the Torah should be the guide. And Rahmanul Islam, when somebody gets up from Avelut, we want to try to re-emphasize the fact that although they have suffered a terrible loss, nonetheless, the challenge is not to use that loss as an excuse to rebel, to reject, but rather try, as difficult as it might be, to reaffirm your attachment and connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu via a commitment to his Torah. So once again, symbolically, as soon as the person gets up from Shiva, we call him to the Torah, symbolically remind him of that. That idea is triggered right here. Am Yisrael are going into a new, this is a transition in the history of the nation. They are, up until now, this nation has lived either in Mitzrayim or wandering in the desert. They are now going to have the final element in the ultimate formulation of the mission statement of Geulat Mitzrayim. The ultimate completion. There was the Hotzeiti, the Hitzalti, Vigaalti, and Vilakasti, which was fulfilled through Matan Torah, Vilakasti Yechem Lilam. And then the next phrase, Veheveti Yechem, El Haaretz, Asher Nasati Et Yadi, Lateit Otah. I made a promise to you. So this is a new trend, starting a new beginning, a new home, and so on and so forth. So symbolically, to remind Am Yisrael in this very important transition that the entry into Eretz Yisrael represents this new element, you have to reconfirm your life and commitment to Torah. So symbolically, how does Moshe Rabbeinu, how does Kodesh Baruch Hu ask him to do this? Write the entire Torah on these stones, and the stones will be available as a testimony to everybody. Because the idea of Sid, the plaster is very soft and can be removed very easily. If somebody wants to now read, because if you're going to cover it with plaster, how are you supposed to read it? The idea ultimately is that if you want to read it, you now remove the plaster, and now it's protected, it was protected, and you'll be able to check. In fact, the Ramban claims that for the first time, every single person in Am Yisrael had a chance to see how a Torah should be written. Namely, does anybody know what tagin are? Tagin? Yeah? The crowns. That's correct. There are X number of letters in the Torah where on top of the letter there are these little crowns that emerge from them. No place in the Torah does it say you're supposed to put tagin. The Ramban claims that this time around, when Moshe wrote the entire Torah, because the Ramban disagrees with Ibn Ezra, who claims that it was not just the Azharot, the Ramban interprets it literally, from Bereshit Bara until the end, the entire Torah. So Moshe wrote Bereshit Bara, so you saw the way he wrote each letter, and each letter that had these tagin, told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's the letters Shatnez Get, the Shin, the Ayin, the Tet, the Nun, the Zion, the Gimel, and the Sadi. All have tagin. Why those letters? Beats me. I have no idea. I'm sure the Kabbalists had a field day trying to figure that out. But now you would be able to look and see how the tsura of every single letter was. And then anybody who wanted to write a Sefer Torah would now copy it from these particular stones. Would copy it from those stones. But again, symbolically what's happening is that it's a firm reminder that we're starting a new stage in our life, and that stage in life behooves, demands Am Yisrael to engage in this recognition of the fact that that it's predicated upon a commitment to Torah. In fact, just give me one second. Rabbeinu Bachya comments and says that is the reason why in the second bracha of Birchat HaMazon, Nodelecha, we make reference to Al Toracha Shelima D'Tan. What is the nickname of the second bracha of Birchat HaMazon? What's its nickname? Birchat Ha? No, it is a bracha. No. But what's the nickname specific to this bracha? The first one is bracha called Birchat HaZak. What's the second one called? Birchat HaAretz. It's a thank to HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al HaAretz. The third one is called Birchat Yerushalayim. So Al HaAretz. So Rabbeinu Bachya emphasizes why in that phrase, okay, there were other ideas as well, but he focuses, why is Al Torah Chashalim Adatanu there? To emphasize that Eretz, Chenda, Tova, Urechava is only granted to us Al Tanai, that what? We observe Al Torah Chashalim Adatanu. But if we abandon Al Torah Chashlim Adatanu, then there is no guarantee that we will be entitled to Eretz Yisrael. And history has proven that unfortunately twice already, and we hope it will never happen a third time, but there are no guarantees, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will strip us from our land due to the fact that people were not as committed as he had hoped for. So, yes.
I don't understand why it's in Moab, though.
Because
they won't have a chance to read it.
No, because that's where... No. Ah, so now what's going to happen to the... Okay, that'll take me back to the next point. Now, Moshe's going to write these things in Moab. Now, you ask a very good question. You mean to tell me he's supposed to leave them there in Eretz Moab? Those 12 stones supposed to leave them there? Ah. So now maybe, there were four writings, there were four stones, but it's what happens to one of them? They get moved around someplace. So maybe it's the Eretz Moav one that ultimately winds up where? In Gilgal, perhaps. In Gilgal. And those now become the permanent stones in Gilgal. Maybe the ones that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. Precisely. So there may have been, as Rashi reports, three sets of stones. And it's not that Rashi ignored the Gemara, but he may have been bothered by your question. Sure, Moshe Rabbeinu writes these 12 stones Eretz Moab. Everybody's going to go into Israel, cross the Jordan River, and they're going to leave these 12 stones there in Eretz Moab. Who needs them? Who's going to look at them?
You could argue that there's still some around Galut.
That's a very good point.
Also,
excellent point.
Right.
Yes.
You're writing it to them.
Lashon.
It clearly is not just for the Jews, but it's either their conduct in Exodus 12, or to know what Jews are like. This is the way the Jews conduct themselves.
Right. Or if you're doing it b'shivim lashon in recognition of what you just said. Knowing that there's going to be a Jewish community in Germany, so you better write the Torah in German. Knowing that there's going to be a Jewish community in Babylonia, you better write the Torah in Aramaic. Knowing there's going to be a Jewish community in America, you better write in English too. You better write in English.
But what about for the other nations themselves, if they should want to become Jewish?
Okay. That's an interesting point. I don't want to get into that now. Is there really such a hope and aspiration that everybody is going to become Jewish? We don't find such a thing like that. We only find a hope and aspiration that they will observe Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. We don't have any such hope. Yes?
When the 70 nations come to be gathered, that's hope.
Right.
So they'll have it, and how many stones can be in the Torah, the Torah.
Okay. That's also a good point. Yes, there are times when all of the nations will come to the Beit HaMikdash. L'chog et Chag HaSukkot, that is correct. Yes. Yeah. So now it's starting to make a little more sense what's happening here. It's starting to make a little more sense. Yeah.
Why didn't you say the ones in Moloch were carried to Yavin? Like, why specifically is the Gilgal
where? I don't know. Anyway, there's no doubt that that could be, that's correct. That is correct. That's correct. Yes.
You know what happened to them?
What happened to them?
No,
I don't know. I don't know. I've never seen anybody make any reference in any museum. If you go to Shiloh or anything like that. And I've been on Har Eibal, and I haven't seen any of the stones there. There's a big yeshiva, Yeshivat Hasdera. It's called Yeshivat Har Barakah. No, it's a Har Grizit. Right opposite Har Eibal. Yes.
Why does the Torah in
that's not, I can't answer that. I don't know. It's a good question. Why sometimes the feminine, sometimes the masculine? I guess to tell all women that we treat them equally.
Yeah.
I know it's not a good answer. I have no idea. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't know.
Why they covered with cement? Is it covering up those
written on it? What? It's a white cement. It's to preserve. Now I don't know how cement. It's not how plaster. Okay, I'm telling you what everybody says. I don't know how plaster. The text is underneath it.
No, one of them is underneath. First it says plaster.
Right. The first time it's underneath it, then
right.
You write on top, then you cover it.
Yeah, but how can you write on plaster?
You can write easier on the fan. You see a difference between the letter and the background. On stone, you wouldn't see the difference between the letter and the background unless it's really engraved.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What as the symbol? The symbol is, as you're standing there at the Yarden, I want you to be aware of what you're entering. You're entering into Eretz Yisrael, and the purpose is to observe everything that's written on these stones.
How big were these stones?
It doesn't say how big they were. It just says that they were Avanim Shleimot.
But that's the one that was there. Is that all?
Right.
But it doesn't say that necessarily.
No, but it says they were big. It says in Pasuk, Avanim Gedolot. But they were one stone.
Why do you consider
12? 12, because of the 12 Shvatim.
Where do you get
them? No place here. In Tanakh it always says, Shem Esrei Avanim.
In
Navi. In Navi, yeah. Here it doesn't say how many.
Why do you have 4 sets of the stones?
That I don't have a good question. I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know why wasn't one symbol sufficient. Either Moshe at Arvis Mav, or Yehoshua at Gilgal, or at the Aver Hayar, at the Yarden itself. And what did he need all of these things?
Yeah, in addition, saying that it's the same Torah in Moab and in the Yarden, like,
okay.
The same implies the continuity.
Okay. So, but then it wouldn't, we needed 3 times.
I don't know why you need the Yarden. I can understand Moab
and Gilgal, right, and Har Eibal, right. Why exactly at the Yarden?
Where's Gilgal?
City where in Israel which happened to have housed the Mishkan for a couple of years. You know, the Ohel Moed traveled around. But Gilgal wasn't its only location. There were other locations as well.
It is a Jut, isn't it? It's a testimony.
That is correct.
So it would be with Aronai Jut.
You're right. But again, the question is why, how many do you need? How many of these do you need?
Whatever you want to have a testimony for whatever reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did these stones become a Mizbeach?
No. The Mizbeach was made
separately.
It says, then just built a separate Mizbeach. Now the point of having all of the Torah written on a stone is another point. This the Ramban also makes. Everybody recognizes that to put the entire Torah on a stone would have to be done miraculously. Everybody knows that. because naturally nobody can arrange that. So what message are they trying now to communicate to Israel? That just as the writing of these stones were done with miraculous intervention, God's miraculous intervention, so too is the conquest, the transition to Israel, also going to involve Nisim v'Niflaot. So that precisely somebody should ask, how in the world could Moshe Rabbeinu have written, or Yahushua have written, the entire Torah on 12 stones, each one, 12 times? It's impossible. Must be Ma'aseh Nisim were involved in this. If Ma'aseh Nisim were involved in this, apparently, you should come to the conclusion that there were Ma'aseh Nisim in the conquest of the land. Now, this is not agreed upon, although ultimately, Rabotai, it's true, but the Ma'aseh Nisim with conquest of the land is not exactly the Ma'aseh Nisim that we're accustomed to reading about in Mitzrayim and the Midbar. In fact, there was supposed to be a transition. If God wanted miraculously to what? To enable us to conquer the land through miraculous only, he would have told us the way he said it in Mitzrayim. Hashem yilachem lachem ve'atem takarishu. You just keep quiet, just sit there, just don't go hysterical, I'll take care of it for you. That's not what happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expected us to participate in military battle, and presumably, experience loss of life, and injury, and piguas, and things like that, and which no doubt took place. So to some extent, it was supposed to be a transition to a more natural way of living, obviously b'siyata d'shmaya, but the nisim giluyim are not as prominently featured at this particular time. Not as prominently featured. What is that? Is this a mitzvah? No. Because in Sefer HaMitzvot, it's only a mitzvah l'dorot. Something that is perpetual. There's no perpetual mitzvah to write stone, to write anything on stones. So it can't count as one of the Tayyag mitzvot.
Isn't it a mitzvah to write a
stone? What?
Isn't it a mitzvah to write a stone?
Yes, but not on stones.
And where does that come from?
That's going to come later. No, we will learn it at the end of Parshas Lech Vayelech Razim. We will get to it. The mitzvah of writing Sefer Torah. There are two mitzvot that are recorded after we are told that Moshe dies. Two mitzvot. And we'll say something about that when we get to it. One final point. We are going to see next time that there are six tribes on Har Gerizim and six tribes on Har Ebal. Why of all places should these stones be placed on the mountain where there are curses and not where there are blessings? Why?
That's the stick, not the carrot. That's to remind you of the punishment.
Excellent. There are two perspectives. One is yours. To remind people, don't think that this is, I want to do it, I don't want to do it. There is a firm iron hand that's telling you that if you're going to turn on that light, you're going to be stoned. There's a firm iron hand telling you if you're going to eat non-kosher meat, you're going to get 39 lashes. There's a firm iron hand telling you, if you consume chametz on Pesach, you will die through karet. That's one possible interpretation. Chizkuni chooses to make a more soothing comment, and he says, it's specifically to offer a sense of nichum, a kind word for those six tribes that have to be there and utter and what? And in effect utter the curses. Why would they select it? And not my other friend. Why could I be the one to be the recipient, quote unquote? Obviously it's to include everybody. The brachot were to be extended to all 12 and the klalot to all 12. But why did I have to be the medium through which the klalot? So as a consolation, the Torah is now being placed specifically on Har Eival and not on Har Gerizim as somehow the token consolation for the fact that they now have to suffer as having heard the klalot, which will be articulated in the coming psukim. Okay, we'll stop here, Rabbi Tai. We'll continue next Shabbat.